This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
Hello, and Happy New Year, and welcome to West Coast Bias. I'm your host, Jake Merrifield, and I'm here joined by my good friend, Jamal Artis. How you doing, Jamal?
Good. Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners. It's finally 2021, and everything is perfectly fine now.
Oh, yeah. Where it's a total Happy New Year, turn a page, nothing else is going on, nothing to see here, and everything is normal, and that's it. Yeah, good. So, yeah, very good. Glad to hear it. Jamal, we will forego talking about anything that has any actual substantial weight or any consequence, of course, and we'll stay in fun sports land. Let's talk some West Coast Bias with some West Coast teams, and really that just means L.A. and the Lakers and pretty much the Lakers and the Rams and the Chargers, for that matter, because we kind of ignore the Clippers. But we are West Coast Bias, and on Twitter, that is at WB West Coast Bias. And Jamal, you are at Champs Papa 1015. No, Champs. What is it, Jamal?
Correct. Yeah, you got it right the first time. Champs Papa 1015.
Oh, I had it right. See, I don't know. I got confused there.
You got it right.
Champs Papa 1015. I am at WB Jake 68, and the What's Brewing Show is at What's Brewing Show. Let's just hop right into it. I know over the weekend we had some playoff games, and for the NFL, the Rams and the Seahawks met, and I think they set offensive football back about 1,000 years, and it was like an SEC battle that ended up 30-20. But you look at some of the stat lines on there, both quarterbacks threw for like 160 yards or something. The Rams had a quarterback knocked out in the first couple plays, just really the defenses took over this game, and the Rams were on top of it. What'd you think of that, and what do you think about the Rams going into next week versus the old pack?
Well, they showed us the blueprint, and thankfully the quarterback you mentioned, Wolford, who was starting because, I think the last time we spoke, it had just broken that Jared Goff had dislocated his thumb and required surgery. So he missed the last game where the Rams clinched the playoff via win, and then he was going to miss this game. He was back as a backup, emergency backup, actually. And he needed to be inserted. Wolford got hurt, what's being called the stinger. So basically he was running on a plane, got tackled, and his head and neck got wrenched. So he had to go to the hospital. Thankfully he's fine. And he was back with the team when the game ended. Goff played as well as you could with the surgically repaired thumb, only 9 of 19. He did have a key touchdown at the end to kind of close out the game. But the story on the offensive side was definitely Cam Akers, their rookie, who ran for 146 yards on the ground, and they caught another 30 in the air and scored a touchdown. So I think have their blueprint, which is unleash Akers, grind out teams on offense, or at least grind out the other team on defense. Hope that Goff doesn't make any mistakes. Which he did it in this last game. So, and then let the defense do what it does best, and that's just wreak havoc. Seattle had no way of getting through the defense most of the game. It was until it was late and pretty much out of hand when the Rams gave up some points. But Aaron Donald was his beastly best. The other guys were out there. Fox got a couple of sacks against Russell Wilson. They made him really uncomfortable. And Jalen Ramsey didn't let DJ Metcalf go off like he did the last game that they played in Seattle. So that's their blueprint. Run with Akers. Hope Goff doesn't make any mistakes. And then let the defense just attack, attack, attack.
Yeah, and you said Metcalf didn't go off, and he didn't go off for a ton of yards. He still had two touchdowns and a 50-yard catch and all that stuff. But you're right; it wasn't like the something that just turned the game on its head. And I'm wondering how the Rams, Donald ended up being banged up in that game too, right? I think he had to be back. Yeah. So as long as he's healthy and back and ready to go, you have to give them at least a puncher's chance against the pack, even though they're playing pretty well as well. But with that defense, I mean, yeah, like I said, it is a blueprint. You want to run the ball and play good defense, and then hope you're within shouting distance at the end, especially if you're kind of nursing along. So I'm sorry, you said Wofford was probably going to be available for the next game, right?
He should be.
But will he be the one playing?
Right, exactly. That'll more than likely not. I think Goff will probably be starting because unless his thumb acts up during the week. And I personally would prefer Wofford just because it's going to be freezing. You don't know how the thumb is going to how the weather's going to affect Goff's thumb. It's on his throwing hand. The weather conditions. You never know what it's going to be like during game day. Not sure if it's even a day or night game. So, if you get snow flurries, the last thing you want is a guy with a broken thumb or a surgically repaired thumb trying to grip a ball in the snow and trying to get, passes off versus somebody like Wofford, who was able to use his legs as much as he is his arm to at least win that last game. So, it's not the best case scenario. This is why you want to win your division, though. Had they been the home team, beat Seattle, this isn't who they would be playing. But you give them a puncher's chance because of the defense. But the weather in Green Bay, there's a reason they're 50-1 all time playing home games in certain degree weather in the playoffs. So we'll see.
I agree with you. Unlike the NBA, where the home court advantage is completely out the window now without fans there, the NFL and college football, the outdoor sports still have a tangible home court home field advantage. When you talk about these winter games on the road across the country, that's definitely a big deal, and that's something the Packers got in their back pocket right now, and certainly that's. Is not something that bodes in the Rams' favor for sure. Now, as far as the other NFL team, the Chargers, they fire Anthony Lynn after finishing the season on a 4 or 5 game winning streak. They almost get back to 500, 7-9, but I think it was just a matter of there were so many close losses over the last since Lynn had been the head man, and then you combine that with just that absolute drubbing they got by the Patriots earlier in the year, and then some of the weird miscues of the special teams and all that stuff, and I guess they just decided it was time to move on, especially since they have the hot new quarterback guy in Justin Herbert in the stable. Do you have any idea who you think they might hire for that job, or any thoughts on who they should hire? I should say, I mean, of course, there's reports out there about all the candidates. You got your BNMEs and your Joe Brady's and things like that. Jason Garrett, even Urban Meyer, it floated around, which I don't know about that either. But do you have anybody that you think the Chargers should go after or shouldn't go after? I guess
they should go after BNME. I mean, that's who they should go after. He knows that. He's been with the Chiefs, so he knows the division. They have the weapons. He's an offensive mind with the Chiefs. They have the weapons where he wouldn't have a hard time adjusting to being the head man instead of a coordinator. One of the things they say, sometimes these coordinators don't translate to when it comes to being tasked with running the team versus just a phase of the offense or defense. So, but I think knowing the division and having dynamic personnel would be great for him because he would be a first year coach. That being said, my understanding is he's linked to, I believe, Atlanta because he has some ties with the GM, and there was another job that he was linked to that I don't remember right now.
Well, it's funny. You talk about Bieniemy. He's got such an extensive career that he could be linked to every job in the country based on his travels. I mean, from freaking the middle of the country to both coasts, it's kind of crazy. So, yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, there can't be that many jobs that are any more attractive than the Chargers when you look at,
exactly.
The talent they have on defense, plus the fact they have, Justin Herbert as a second-year guy on a very friendly contract. The window there seems to be wide open for the Chargers to really make some hay if they can, it's funny, if they could just win a couple close games, they would have been in the playoffs this year, so.
In the playoffs, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it could be, today, Doug Peterson was fired from the Eagles, and he won a Super Bowl there. He could easily be a candidate for this job as well. I know that his name has been bandied for the Jets. Oh, that's the other team I was thinking where Bieniemy might have interviewed. I think he did interview actually for the Jets job already. So that's another person you could consider, is Doug Peterson. I don't know if he has any ties to the Chargers, but there's always a possibility. You know, it depends on what the Chargers want to do, who they want to bring in as well.
No, that's for sure. And I'm hoping that they, I'd be fine with Bieniemy. Another guy that's going to be a hot commodity, especially, coming off of the weekend that he did, is the Rams defensive coordinator. That's another guy getting talked up about, things like that. I don't know if he'd be the fit for the Chargers or not, but I'd rather see somebody like that, maybe giving somebody a shot. If you're not going to go out and get somebody that's absolutely a bona fide guy who's won, head coaching wise, I'd rather have that than some sort of retread. Like the worst case scenario for me is that they get somebody like a Bill O'Brien or a Jason Garrett or something like that.
Or Adam Gase.
Oh God. Yeah. Okay, that is the absolute worst case scenario. Yeah, you give him he's not only that'd be terrible.
Patricia, any of the guys who just got fired,
Yeah.
There's always a possibility they'll do that, but no, I don't want to see that either.
Yeah, I don't want to see that either. Obviously, if you can give Urban Meyer a spin, fine, why not? That would be one, we haven't seen him on the pro level yet, and there's a lot of potential there. Otherwise, go get one of these nice, hot coordinator guys that you think can be, a head coach guy, and let's let it roll. But just please, I do not want to see a Jason Garrett or, Gase would be the absolute worst. Okay, so that's enough of the Chargers and the Rams, I guess. Let's move on to, it's certainly my bread and butter. I think we have our most spirited discussions about, and that's the good old Lakers. And they're sitting, what are they now? They're 7-3, I want to say, right?
8-3. They won last night.
Oh, 8-3, yeah. Oh, yeah, with a nice win over the Beard and the stupid Rockets. That was very, very nice to watch and see, especially – a little bit of the not necessarily trash talking, but a little bit of gamesmanship from Christian Wood. And I hadn't seen Wood play very much, and I've only seen him in the one game with the Rockets. Really, I didn't pay attention to him too much last year. But not a big man that incites a lot of fear in me anymore, especially when you see how AD came out in that game and kind of really took it to him. What's been your thoughts on the Lakers since the last time we talked, man?
Well, since the new year, they've only lost once. When we were last discussed them, we were talking about them having to deal with these back-to-back road games, or at least playing on the road and having to play the same team back-to-back. And they've done well. Give them credit. They had some tough games against the Grizzlies and the Spurs. And sometimes Anthony Davis was in the lineup. KCP was out with an ankle injury. And they only lost once. And it's been I'm astonished, even last night's game, I'm astonished at how good they are, despite the fact that they've brought in five guys. And this isn't exactly the same team their starting lineup is not the same starting lineup that they had last year.
No.
And last year they won a championship. And somehow they figured out a way to get these guys involved, to the point where they're just really good and really tough sometimes. And sometimes it takes Kyle Kuzma playing well in the first quarter, and sometimes it's Caruso playing defense. THT continues to – I can't believe that he's only 20. He continues to do well. Sometimes Harold goes off. It's just it's not the same guys, and it's not LeBron and Anthony Davis having to shoulder the load so much sometimes. It's crazy. And so – yeah, to me, they're still the best team in the league, even if their record doesn't completely reflect it. Because I think there are, I think Philadelphia's only lost twice now. They were, they had only had one loss, and then they lost a game sometime last week. It's just amazing to me. I don't know, I can't believe it's where this type of to me, it's always this type of team where it's they're going into the fourth quarter with a big lead, and they don't have to worry about losing it. Whereas last year, if they went into the fourth quarter of the big lead, it would start to get chipped away to the point where you'd have to bring back AD or you'd have to bring back a LeBron, and so you'd lose that keeping their minutes down thing. And it's not happening this year.
Yeah, no.
And then you get a bad game like the Bulls game where they just couldn't stop Zach LaVine. you know, UCLA alum. And they just had enough depth to weather a bad game, and they just didn't have that last year. But it's just amazing to me. I can't believe how much this team has improved on top of winning a championship.
No, and I'll, you know, you corrected me on them being 8-3 and not 7-3. And in fact, the Sixers are 7-3. I don't know if you saw, but they had to play that game yesterday with only like 7 or 8 guys available because they been hammered with that COVID thing. The Lakers now, I mean, it's like they're not nearly full throttle or fully incorporated, and they still are sitting with the best record in the NBA after 10-11 games. And I think that there's so much for Laker fans to be happy about in that, for sure. And, you know, and they've gotten this far not just with not having to have the pedal to the metal the whole time, as you stated, but also they haven't had the worst COVID luck, but they haven't had the best either. I mean, Caruso had to sit for, 4 or 5 games because of that.
Right.
And KCP had to sit for a few games because of his sprained ankle. And, you know, and you already said Davis has missed a game. Has LeBron missed a game yet? I feel like he has, but I know Davis missed a couple games.
I think he sat out a game. I don't think there was anything wrong with him.
Yeah, but it was one of
those. I'm looking at the stats. He's played all 11 games. Only AD has missed a game.
Super heavy minutes, though, either. You know, like, I think they're both, they're averaging, you know, 30, 33 minutes a game, which is not a tiny bit, but, I mean, it's certainly less than what they could have if they were really, really pressing. So, no, I mean, nothing but good things, really, from the Lakers. And that's why it's funny, you know, they dropped the game to the Spurs, a couple days ago. And that was obviously, you know, I think they had a little bit of a built-in excuse that some of them were citing over all the craziness happening in the world that day certainly affected their focus level. And I could buy that. Sure. Why not? But other than that, you know, they even when they're not really seemingly locked in, they're still able to, you know, to beat these teams, and a lot of them have been the lesser competition, but they've also, you know, put a lot of these guys away. You know, I think their point differential is still the best in the league. I believe so. Yeah, and by a bunch as well. You know, the Suns are like six point in the positive, and the Lakers. I'm sorry, the Bucks and the Lakers have the best differential, but the Bucks are sitting there. They've lost 4 games as well. So, you know. You know, it's funny because they kind of have messed around in a few of these games for all the different reasons we stated. They had the extra long postseason, a very short layoff. They're incorporating all these new parts, and they're still doing this well. And then I just get frustrated a little bit with Lakers Twitter with as soon as they, you know, they drop a game or whatever, it's, you know, oh, Schroeder's a problem, and oh, Gasol's not, you know, Gasol's washed up, and you know, all these other things that, you know, is AD what AD needs to be, and all those things. It's like, guys, it's been 11 games. Just freaking relax a little bit, you know.
Yeah. They are the best team in basketball. They are the best team in basketball. It doesn't matter what other teams are doing. I would put them, you know, because of AD and LeBron, as we've said, on the court when it push comes to shove, they're the best team in basketball. And it's just amazing.
Yeah, and you know, and that doesn't guarantee that they're going to win the NBA title, right? And the, you know, there's nothing that guarantees that. However, they are, because of the players they've got and the way that, you know, the staff, the coaching staff they have, and the administration that the Lakers has, they've put themselves with the best chance to win the title. And I would just say, you know, Laker fans, if you're ever getting frustrated with the product on the court right now, just try to remember what it was like just a few short years ago when you had a circus in the front office, a circus on the court, and they were turning in the worst records in franchise history, pretty much, missing the playoffs for a decade. You know, this should be enough to make fans, you know, just kind of just appreciate in the moment, especially as crappy as a couple years we've had, you know, with the COVID and all that stuff and all the things that have happened this year. The Lakers have been a bright spot for any Angelino that's not a Clipper fan, and God bless you if you are, right? So if you're going on hard times with the Lakers have a tough game, just say, oh, gee whiz, this could be, you know, the post-Kobe era all over again, the post-Kobe pre-LeBron era all over again, and that should make you feel better. Now, of course, if they make it through the playoffs and they get knocked out in the playoffs without winning the title, everybody's going to be sad and there's going to be, you know, people are going to be pissed off, but even if they don't win the title, that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy this really good team for what it is right now, right? Don't make yourself pre-miserable, for the fact that they might not win the title this year. Because guess what? They're favored to win the title, and you know they have as good a chance as anybody. So let's enjoy it while we're here. I mean, do you have any disagreement with that? And they just won it last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on, guys.
They won it last year. There's a five-year moratorium. Enjoy the game. It's fun. I watch games, and I'm having fun.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. You know, THP, he's 20 years old, and he's cutting through the defenses and scoring less. Look at Marc Gasol's in a Laker uniform finally, and he's contributing. You know, LeBron is doing LeBron things. AD's doing it's like, yeah, I don't – you know me. I'm nuts. But
you are nuts, and you've been better this year. I'll tell you that. Yeah, you've been – you know, and you're Sid Megan.
This year is going to be – this year is going to be so much easier than last year for me. So
oh, yeah.
You won't hear anything negative.
Got that title in the bank. It's beautiful. Now, with somebody like Schroeder, like I can't get over the fact that the Lakers finally have a quick, you know, shooty, you know, point guard that, you know, is running all over the court, you know, making plays and stuff. And, you know, he's been kind of, you know, if there's been any sort of Laker controversy this year, he's been kind of the spearhead of it as far as, like, people grousing over, like, is he trying to do too much or is he fitting in and yada, yada, yada. I really don't have any negative things to say about Schroeder, but I know some people do. What have you thought about him on the court so far? I've been pleased as punch.
I just enjoy the fact that there's somebody who can take away the pressure of LeBron handling the ball.
Right.
Or the offense stagnating because he does so many things. I was watching the game last night, you know, where he helped push the lead. It wasn't necessarily him scoring. It was just him getting the Rockets defenders out of position because he's so quick with the ball and opening up things for the shooters, opening up things for the big men down low. You know, and they just look faster, especially with KCP coming back and Schroeder. When they're the backcourt, the other teams are just getting run over. You know, there were some plays there where I think it was Schroeder, KCP, Caruso were the guys on the court with AD and I forget who the other guy was. Oh, Harrell. And those three were just poking the ball away, grabbing rebounds, and then dribbling up immediately and getting guys in a position and stuff like that. So, yeah, I have nothing but good to, you know, I would like for him, I've noticed his three-point shooting isn't quite what it was last year. It's not terrible, but yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know how you can complain about what his place is on the court when he does so many things that I'm not used to seeing from a Laker point guard, because like we've discussed, we haven't really had a Laker point guard actually play the traditional point guard role.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been like since Nick Van Exel, I want to say. As far, you know, if you want to ignore the decent Laker teams, not good or you know whatever, you know, I'm gonna throw away the ball era, right? Whatever. But you know, and to your point, you know, they actually, I want to say, last night against the Rockets, there was a sequence of a few minutes where they actually had AD and LeBron both off the court, think towards the end of the third and the middle of the fourth or at beginning of the fourth.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a total train wreck, right? Because they have so many other guys that can play.
Yeah, they were up there. They were up 13. I think those two guys weren't on the court, and they pushed it up to 20.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of quick sequences with Caruso, THT, outlets from Gasol and Schroeder just kind of wrecking havoc. You know, the ball's not going in for him, but last night, but getting the defense on its back foot, basically. It's like the Lakers have all these weapons all of a sudden. It's just like, wow, you know. Yes, they'll probably stagnate. Yes, there'll be times where they'll be tired and won't be hitting on all cylinders. But, you know, last night it was just like, you know, pushing around a team that they were able to do it so easily.
No, you know, another thing, too, I think it was very understated that you talk about how they kind of were playing in a little bit of a malaise at points in the last week or so, but we already mentioned it, but I think having KCP and both KCP and Caruso out, I mean, obviously that shortens down the guard rotation quite a bit, but, you know, those guys bring a lot of energy to the court, especially Caruso. It's kind of like their one real hard-ass guy as far as, like, getting up into people, you know, and you saw him defending Harden last night a little bit, and, you know, and I think that's a big part of the spirit of the team as well, you know, and when you have those guys out, you're definitely going to miss something. You know, you're not missing the LeBron AD elements of it, but you're going to be missing, you know, part of your toughness, I think, on the court as well. So that's something that I'm looking forward to seeing those guys being back on the court again. Now, a guy that I've been, you know, we talked about a little bit before with Montrezl Harrell. Tell me if this is kind of crazy. What the thought that occurred to me last night, kind of watching him play, is that, you know, you're trading out, Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, and you're bringing in Montrez and Marc Gasol. And I didn't really, you know, appreciate Montrezl Harrell too much before he came to the Lakers because, you know, he was on the Clippers, and I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that. But it's funny because I didn't ever – the Lakers, you know, have always, like, when they had Shaq and when they've had other, you know, real good centers, they would always play that team that had the real scrappy, undersized guy that would make a crap load of plays and be filled with energy and be kind of chippy and whatnot. I'm trying to remember the guy from Houston that would always kind of give Shaq's a little bit of problems during the three-peat era. But, you know, the Lakers finally have a guy like that. And Montrezl isn't that undersized. He's not 6'6". You know, he's a full 6'10". But it's nice to have a big energy guy, but you have that guy in addition to having two big giant centers in AD and Marc Gasol. But Montrezl is much more skilled offensively than I thought he was. I know, and so he gets a lot of points off a hustle, but he also has some pretty good moves. What do you thought of Montrezl the last week or so?
He's been great. I mean, when you're talking about a guy coming off the bench, 24 minutes, playing 24 minutes a game and giving you instant offense. You know, he's second on the team in rebounds, behind AD, with 8. And he's just like last night, he was doing some of the things you were talking about, hustle plays, using, some low post moves to get to the basket, scoring. He had this great play, this great sequence where he scored off a Kuzma rebound, a tip in, where he just flew in and tipped it in.
Yeah.
And then on the next play, he went down into his post moves, and it spun around Christian Wood and everybody else and scored on a layup. And again, it was one of those sequences where the Lakers were like teetering on being only up 11 after being up 20, and quickly he got it back up to 16 because I think he had an and-one on one of those plays. And then he comes around and he just comes in and nonchalantly holds onto the ball and just does a fake up mid-range jump shot like he was Kawhi Leonard right in the defender's face. And, you know, it's just amazing because he provides this instant energy, but he can also he can also give you that instant offense where he can create on his own. And so that negates some of the things that can stagnate the offense. You know, one of the things last year, sometimes the reason the Lakers would lose these leads because they didn't have anybody who could push the offense when AD and LeBron weren't there. And when you got guys like we mentioned, Schroeder, who can drive to the basket, THC can drive the basket, but then you also have Harrell, a big man, using low post moves and creating his own shot. He's been the best signing to me that the Lakers made this offseason. Because of how relatively cheap he is and how well he's been able to integrate himself into the offense.
No, there's no doubt. And when you combine, you know, getting Harrell and then getting Schroeder, two kind of youngish guys who bring so much energy, the two best bench players in the league last year, and you bring them both onto your team, and you're able to incorporate them, and it just gives them so much more flexibility. And, you know, we Emerald talked about the defensive side of the Lakers so far, but, you know, they're certainly a different defensive team than they were last year, but they're also have been pretty good. I want to say they're sixth in all, you know, they're like sixth in the defensive efficiency categories or whatever it is, but it definitely looks different than it did last year, right? But I think it's okay because, I mean, you know, what you've gained on the offensive side of the ball is like just a ton, and then I think they're still like they're only going to get better playing defense the more they play with each other. And, you know, I think that, you know, so that's another just another very, very bright spot. But, you know, what you're saying is absolutely true. With offensively, it's funny, too. They have all of these options, and they can, like, lean on this very heavily during the regular season and have so many different ways they can go. And, you know, for one, you know, different guys will be the bright spots on different nights for sure. But then always lurking in the background there, if they get in a little tough spot, oh, yeah, we'll just roll LeBron and AD out there and have them do their two-man game or just let one of them assert themselves. And it's like they have, you know, it just seems like they have so many cheat codes this season as far as how they're going to get stuff done offensively. And as long as they, you know, I think I'm not worried about their mental toughness, and I'm not worried about, you know, how well a defense they can play when it comes down to crunch time. So I'm very optimistic about them being able to, you know, kind of, you know, take a very good record into the postseason, end up with whatever home court advantage means or doesn't mean, they'll have it, and, you know, have, you know, every bit as good a shot as any other team, and be, you know, a heavy favorite probably to win the title this year. And, right, that's nothing but a good thing. So, I mean, you know, that's beautiful. Now, Jamal, before we finish off the Lakers, last night specifically, you know, they played Houston, the stupid Rockets, and the stupid Harden and all that stuff. But, the Rockets also have one Boogie Cousins playing his first meaningful basketball in a couple of years. And
I forgot about that.
Huh? What's that?
I forgot about that. Forgot about that sequence. Yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah, right? And this is one thing where it's like, you know, number one, I have a couple things to say. One, Markieff Morris got thrown out of the game on a shove, and then another shove, you know, shove of a player and then a shove of Boogie. I can't remember what player he shoved down. And on one hand, I feel that Markieff getting thrown out of the game was absolutely fully justified because he kind of had a little overreaction in the beginning, and then he goes after Boogie, so of course he's going to get the flagrant and then the technical. Like, all that made sense to me. With that being said, I love the fact that, you know, you take Montrezl Harrell, you take Caruso, and you take Markieff Morris. These are some guys that you still need some kind of MFers out there that are going to be tough, and they can be kind of enforcers and things like that. And I thought that's kind of the role that Markieff was stepping into, and that's fantastic for me. You know, so I'm sad he got for his wallet that he got thrown out of the game, but I was very happy to see it. Now, with that being said, I thought that Boogie got a little screwed on that when you figure he was just stepping in to, you know, like, of course he deserved the technical for Markieff, but then he ends up getting thrown out later on a weak-ass technical on LeBron. But it was good for me to see. I was happy to see Boogie actually running around and playing again. And what'd you think of that whole confrontation and all that stuff?
Oh, I agree with you with the whole, like, it's nice to have somebody like Markieff who can step in, and he isn't going to let guys try to intimidate the team, and certainly not going to let somebody, you know, yelling at the bench just because they made a shot. I really don't know where that came from. So I'm glad the Lakers have somebody like that. I always like it. You know, I always like it when they have somebody like that on the team. And yeah, Boogie got screwed because he got the flagrant for because he already had a tech, but then they gave him a flagrant two on the foul that he committed. So
yeah, that play on LeBron was just ridiculous. Like, I mean, yeah, whatever. He hit the guy in the head, but he was swiping down at the ball that was supposed to be there. I mean, that's
at the ball.
That was a total LeBron homer call.
I wish Boogie was still on the team. I mean,
me
I don't
too.
Mind having Marcus Ball. I wish Boogie was still on the team. He's looked like he's been moving around pretty well for a guy that's coming off Achilles and then a knee. I think it was the ACL. Injury. So yeah, I would have liked for to been part of the whole Boogie with the Lakers. Would have liked to see what he could have done. I mean, you know, he's 5.8 points, 5.5 rebounds, 1.3 assists on the season, but I don't know. I think he would have I think he could have added something to the team. But yeah, you're right. I like having somebody like Markieff Morris to have toughness when they need it, and certainly no one's going to push the Lakers around when you got a guy like that on the bench.
No, it's a beautiful thing. So, Jamal, what's going on? Did Justin Turner sign with anybody else? Is he still a Dodger? What's going on with baseball or anything else you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? I'm sorry, geez. I guess I forgot. Geez, did I? I totally forgot. Rest in peace, Tomo Sorda. And Uncle Tommy's gone. And there's been a lot of wonderful tributes to him over the weekend and things like that. There was three or four great interviews on the PMS show on Friday afternoon. They talked to Steve Sachs. They talked to Oral Hershiser. That was great. So if you want to go back and listen to those, I highly recommend it. But Tom Lasorda passes.
93 years old.
Yeah.
Had I think 70-year relationship with the team, from player to minor league player to scout, coach, manager.
Certainly a great run.
Right. And there's, you know, manager in their minor league system in the late 60s, early 70s, before he took over 20 years as manager. And then, of course, an executive of the team afterwards, and just an overall ambassador. I never got a chance to meet Tommy in all my years of going to Dodger games. Obviously, you know, he had his spot at Dodger Stadium. Never really had access to him. My mom sent me a picture of them that he took, and it's just emblematic. He was at an Italian restaurant. My mother was there with a friend. And as soon as he walked in, everybody recognized him. And, of course, everybody wanted to take a picture with him. My mom said he took a picture with everybody before he sat down to eat. And that seems to be emblematic of a lot of the stories that people who didn't play with him or under him were saying, you know, just that anytime you met him, he would talk to you. And if it was, yeah. And if he could, he would try to get you to say, I love the Dodgers. And if it was a Dodger fan, it was fairly easy. And he would sign autographs for everybody. I mean, I've been to plenty of Dodger games and spring training games where he was there and there was access to him and people would go up to him. And it didn't matter whether the game was going on. He always gave people the time of day. You know, in the YouTube sphere, there's plenty of audio of the other side of Uncle Tommy. Where he emblematic of his fiery personality, because he was that too. I mean, he was a baseball player when he pitched, because he was a pitcher. He had no problem throwing at a guy, and if a guy wanted to fight him on the mound, he would. In fact, I watched a documentary because of course the Dodgers channel was running all sorts of Tommy content all weekend. I watched a documentary about his career, and one of the caveats for him to manage in the system, the Dodger minor league system, was he could not get into fights. They told him he had to be a manager. He's no longer a player. No more fights before we'll consider you for the Dodger job. And in his first managerial job, which was in Pocatello, Idaho, minor league team, he got into a fight like in the sixth inning. You know, a guy got hit by a pitch, ran up against the pitcher, and Tommy Lasorda ran out there like he was, you know, 25, trying to fight the guy. and it didn't matter because he won everywhere. He won as a minor league manager. He won as a major league manager. He was a great ambassador. The other side of the story is there's going to be news about his relationship with his estranged son, who died at a young age. Complication from HIV and AIDS. So I'm sure people will read up on that. And so that goes into his private life, but I don't think it should take away from his legacy as an ambassador for baseball and for the job that he did 20 years as manager of the Dodgers. A lot of guys owe their career to him. And I think that will outweigh whatever somebody brings up about his private life.
No, there's no doubt. And I mean, and obviously you don't have a lot of guys, you know, he's also just kind of what sports and kind of what baseball kind of used to be as well, you know, where you don't have a lot of guys that have a 20-year run. But obviously, you know, as successful pretty much as anybody, you know, 2 World Series, Manager of the Year twice, and just, you know, in just the face, you know, we talk about, you know, Tommy Lasorda and Vin Scully. That, you know, when you think of Dodgers, that's where you kind of start the list, and then you go, you know, with the players from there, and just an unbelievable legacy, both as, you know, as the coach of the Dodgers so many years, and then also as, like you said, an ambassador of the sport, you know, period.
Right.
And as far as what he meant to
LA. Olympic team, though, gold medal.
Yeah, gold medal coach as well. You know, and just you know, unbelievable, meaningful life for any LA sports fan for sure. And and certainly, you know, you want to celebrate the long life he had, and you know, and that's the cool thing is there's so many great stories about him that are both very funny or heartwarming or just kind of just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he just said that kind of thing. That's what Tommy Lasorda was, and so, you know, it's great to have those memories going forward.
And a little bit of a throwback for people of our age. I mean, I don't like when he was the manager when I started watching baseball, and that's what I pictured a baseball manager to be.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it's funny. Nowadays it's guys our age sort of off the field right into managing. You know, the days of guys spending so many years in the minors and things like that, and then being groomed and moved up to management. It's not like that anymore, you know, and managers don't look like company grandfather. You know, we call him Uncle Tommy because, you know, he could have easily been anybody's uncle or grandfather, that kind of situation, who loved the Dodgers, and it just doesn't happen like that anymore. I mean, Dave Roberts graduated UCLA not too long before you stepped on the campus, if you think about it, you know, that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, Aaron Boone is a manager of the Yankees, you know, not that long after retiring and being in a baseball booth as an announcer. You know, it's just funny to me. It's one of the things, as sports fans, as you grow up, you know, you watch, the things aren't the same as they used to be. You know, you're not going to get these white-haired guys who've been lifers doing these things anymore. You're getting these younger and younger guys stepping into these roles, and they're closer to our age, certainly, than when we were kids, where they were closer to our grandfather's age, that kind of situation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And it is kind of like the, you know, a lot of these ends of eras. It's kind of like, you know, you had like Chick passing, when he did, and then you have Vin retiring, and somebody like Tom Lasorda, you know, passing away. And it is a lot of these sort of, you know, kind of the end of an era for a lot of these kind of milestones that we have, especially here in LA, right? You know, and it on one hand it's sad, but on the other hand it's like it really does point to how lucky that someone growing up in LA or being tied to LA has it with all of these kind of really just iconic figures and wonderfully rich, stories, in sports to tell, you know, all the way across the board. And it certainly points to, you know, why we are West Coast bias and, you know, why we care so much about this. It's because there's a lot to care about, you know, no matter how down you want to be on any particular team in any one particular time period, other than the Clippers, who suck and always will suck. But even the Clippers have their own unique history in LA, and it's like, you know, like I said, there's just so much to talk about when it comes to LA sports, and it's not just all a bunch of mailbox headed New Yorkers, you know, banging their heads together, yelling about the Giants or the Mets or whatever,
exactly.
You know, we have our own.
We didn't grow up in Nashville. It'd just be Tennessee sports and, like, I don't know, the Titans, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it is, we should consider ourselves, as hard as it is sometimes to, to look around California, especially like right now, times are tough in California right now, but you can still say there are reasons why we are very blessed and lucky to grow up in this place. And Tom Lasorda is certainly a part of that list, the Dodgers and Lakers and whatever you want to say. So yes, Tommy, you will be missed and thank you.
Yeah. Look up, on YouTube, listeners, Jim Healy. He used some of Tommy Lasorda's colorful drops.
Oh, God. Good stuff.
For his radio show. And it was always hilarious. And I loved it. I love that aspect of Uncle Tommy as much as anybody, if you ask me. Because that was like, oh, okay, he's more like my uncle.
Yeah, one of those interviews. When he like MFing Bavakwa, wasn't that one of the great ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I love it. And yeah, and Kurt Bavakwa deserved it, by the way. If you knew who he was and the rivalry between the Dodgers and the Padres at that time, he deserved it. So I'm pretty happy whenever I would hear that drop. It was a fun thing to listen to on the sports radio every once in a while. But yeah, rest in peace to Tommy and his legacy. And he will be missed, but always remembered.
Very good. All right. Well, Jamal, do you got anything else to talk about?
I was going to recommend the Tiger Woods. We're West Coast bias. Tiger Woods is a product of Southern California's public link, a graduate of Cypress High. Unfortunately, he went to that school in the Bay Area that we don't like to talk about.
Yeah.
From my perspective, his documentary comes out yesterday, the first part. We're in that period now after The Last Dance. Now we're getting these huge documentary, drops of these iconic athletes. Well, Tiger Woods is getting a two-parter on HBO. Obviously, if you have HBO Max, you should be able to watch it. First one dropped last night, the 10th. The next one dropped on the 17th. And it's supposed to be pretty comprehensive in terms of his arc, starting from he was a baby, 3 years old on the Mike Douglas show, or Johnny Carson, one of those guys.
Yeah.
To when he started to fall apart, and then sort of his redemptive comeback, winning the Masters gosh, I think a year ago or maybe the year before. Yeah, I would recommend people watch that. As one of my must-sees, another iconic person in another complicated life.
Yeah, it's very big of you to latch on to a proud Cardinal as well. Good job, Jamal. Yeah.
I cannot stand that aspect of Tiger Woods. You know, I guess he would be a contemporary because his last their year was my freshman year at Cal,
right
before he turned pro. But he was always at games. We would go to a game. Even he would trek across the Bay Area to watch. He would come to Haas Pavilion to watch some Stanford, because at the time, of course, Stanford was a perennial Pac-12 champion and in basketball, and they would always be a contender in the Final Four. And he would come to games, even to Haas Pavilion, to watch them play basketball, which we didn't appreciate as Cal. And then, of course, big game. If you went to, I think, two big games I went to, he was there at Stanford Stadium between Cal football and Stanford football. So, yeah, that's one aspect I can't stand about him, you know, whatever.
That's okay.
I'm willing to hype his doc for the listeners.
Oh, very good. All right, Jamal. Well, it's good talking to you, and we will be catching up again on another What's Brewing show tomorrow. That'll be me, Mike, and Bill, I believe. And then, hopefully one of these days.
I'm working.
Yeah. Hopefully one of these days you'll be available to come on to that show with all of us. But
I'm vaccinated, so hopefully that'll keep me healthy to be able to come see you guys and do the What's Brewing show live.
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to get in the next, a couple weeks or so myself, so we'll see how it goes. Well, until next time, Jamal, what do we say?
We're the West Coast, we're the best coast, we're West Coast bias.
The West Coast bias.